In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A few years ago, our family started learning more and more about Montessori. I had obviously heard about it along the way. It's growing in popularity. But it wasn't until our son started attending a Montessori school that I started to get kind of curious about the philosophy. And one of the core concepts within Montessori that sounds simple, but is actually rather deep and possibly life-changing, is this concept of following the child. In Montessori, that means that lessons are really introduced to children when they show that they're interested and ready. It's not when the teacher or the parent wants the child to be ready for it. It's the work of observing your child to know when they're ready. It's a key concept within Montessori classrooms. I thought it was interesting when I first heard about it. But then as I read more about what it means for infants, I noticed, despite having been a mother for a while, how often I wasn't actually following the child, how often I wasn't noticing the world through my child's eyes. So a few years ago, my youngest daughter was one, and I noticed how often I tried to get her attention with things that I noticed or things I was interested in or even things that I wanted her to do, as opposed to noticing what she was finding naturally interesting in her environment. And once I was aware of how bad I was at this, it started to change everything. I mean, what I've found fascinating is how that concept has aged up. But it's something that I'm trying to find more ways of doing. Instead of barking orders at my sons, as I often do, I'm trying to notice what are they paying attention to at any given time and trying to use that as an invitation to help get them on the same page with me. And it's a simple concept, but it's been pretty powerful. And I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that it's been life-changing. Hey, Mama. Welcome to the Motherly Podcast, where we have honest conversations, really honest, about modern motherhood. I am Liz Tennedy, the co-founder of Motherly, and I'm a mother of four myself. All this month, we're focusing on play. And today, we're interviewing AMI-trained Montessori teachers, authors, and mothers, Simone Davies and Junifa Uzadiki. Their new book, Montessori Baby, just came out in May. It's a fantastic guide to the whole Montessori philosophy, and it's going to teach you how to introduce Montessori really from the very beginning of your baby's life. You may know Simone from her popular book, The Montessori Notebook, and she's a native Australian who called into this podcast from the Netherlands, where she runs parent-child classes. Junifa called in from Nigeria, where she lives and runs a Montessori school and raises her three kids. So it was a very global conversation, and I think proves what is universal about Montessori, not just around the world, but in all phases of life. In our conversation, Simone and Junifa explain the Montessori philosophy and how you can apply it starting with babies and infants, but really aging up to teenagers and young adults. They also talked to us about how they both experienced raising their children the Montessori way and what they witnessed unfold within their children's lives by applying the principles really from birth until young adulthood. Junifa and Simone, welcome to the Motherly Podcast.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much for having us.
So I usually begin by asking my guests what they think makes their approach to motherhood unique. But in this case, as Montessori experts and mothers, I want to kind of lean into the Montessori aspect. So I'm curious for both of you, how has Montessori influenced each of your motherhood journeys?
I'm in a way blessed because I actually discovered Montessori before I had any of my children. So I started Montessori from the very beginning. So basically, all I've known as a mom is how to parent the Montessori way. So the only way that I can really say how it has influenced me is by comparing it in a way to everyone around me and how they parent. I feel like I am being a mom with some knowledge, like with some advanced knowledge. I understand how children develop. I know what to expect in a way. So when my children do things, I know why they're doing it or have an idea why they might be doing it. So my response is different. I observe my children. I look at them and treat them with a different kind of respect, which is very different, especially for here in Nigeria, where children, in a way, are expected to be seen but not heard for the most part. Children are expected to just be very respectful, quiet, they're spanked. So all of those things are very different for me because from the beginning, I've seen them as human beings deserving of respect. I talk to them differently with a respectful tone. I had a natural birth. I also had my children in a birth center. So for a Nigerian, that's actually pretty strange. A lot of the choices that I've made for my children, using cloth diapers, wearing them, the way that I talk to them, my interactions with them are quite different. So I think all of those things happened really because of my introduction and experience with Montessori.
How did you discover Montessori and what drew you to the method? I'm particularly curious, how were you raised? How would you contrast the Montessori method to how you were raised and what you found attractive about it?
I was born and raised in Nigeria, but I moved to the US for college and I, you know, graduated, went to grad school and I started working. But throughout my childhood, my mom was a teacher. So I've always had education in my background, but never planned to be a teacher. I got an MBA and I was working for a Fortune 500 company in the US. But my mom would come to visit and she owned a school. So whenever she would visit, she liked to visit schools in the area just to get ideas. And so one of the times, the school that we went to for her to observe happened to be a Montessori school. And I happened to be the one who took her. I just remember observing through a one-way window. And it was so different from every experience that I had as a child. I remember the children were just working and then I watched them as they set up for lunch. These children by themselves put the tables together, covered it and like laid out their lunch. Something about watching them, it just had an effect on me. And so I went home and I looked for more books to read and decided to take the training. And I guess I've never looked back.
And you just published an amazing new book. So congrats on that. But Simone, same question over to you. How did Montessori influence you through your journey of motherhood? Your kids are a little older. And then is there any contrast with the way that you were raised or is this similar to how you grew up?
I think it's actually because how I was raised in the school that I went to that I ended up, you know, choosing to become a Montessori educator and raising my children this way. My parents have a lot of love for me and I can only feel support. And yet there's always things that you notice that, oh, okay, I wouldn't do that the same. So we had three girls and we were very competitive. We went to a highly academic school and there was no love of learning. It was really just to pass tests and to really perform academically. And I didn't want that for my kids. I wanted them to love learning. So I actually found out about Montessori education when I was looking for a school for my children, and a similar experience. You walk into a Montessori classroom and you're like, wow, I didn't know education could be like this, where the children have hands-on learning experiences. It really resonated with how I was already parenting my children, where I didn't want to bribe them. I wanted to really respectfully raise them and to actually nurture each child for who they were rather than what I wanted them to be. So it really gave me then the tools to be able to allow my children to see what their gifts were, where they found difficulties, and I was their guide, kind of supporting them along their way. And it's held me in good stead because it's been a much more relaxed place to parent from, rather than me feeling like I have to meet some timelines. I could just let them uniquely develop and support them as much as I could. And it's a process of letting go as well. Now my children are 20 and Emma's turning 19. I really feel like it's given me the tools through all stages of their development and to really enjoy each stage.
I want to ground this conversation in Montessori and what we mean when we say Montessori. Not every listener knows who Maria Montessori was. Could you tell us more about her? And I'm hoping you can speak to the context in which she developed this philosophy.
Dr. Montessori developed her ideas as an educator in the early 1900s, and it was 1907 that she started the first Casa de Bambini. And she was actually a doctor, and she used her powers of observation. You learn when you're a doctor, you're observing your symptoms and things like this. And she went and she just looked at what children were actually interested in doing, and then she would set up her classroom and to respond to that. And anything that worked, she would keep, and things that didn't work, she would take out the classroom. So it was in a time when children were definitely sitting in rows of desks, and these children were allowed the freedom to walk around the classroom and choose what they wanted to do. There were mixed ages of children so that the older children could help the younger children. She noticed that the children enjoyed cleaning the classroom and taking care of the things, and that she didn't have to stand at the front of the classroom and give a lesson. Every child could work on their own activities. So it was really quite revolutionary, and was working in the slums of Rome with children who normally wouldn't have such opportunities for education. And if they were getting such good results, what would happen if this could be actually how education was? So she really revolutionized education.
Just that. She just revolutionized education. I have a book on Maria Montessori. She was also one of the first female doctors in Italy, was a pioneer in that part of her career as well. You know, one of the questions that I think a lot of people have about Montessori is this a very particular framework, particular to Italy, to her time, that she developed her method in response to? Or do you see it as Montessori is a framework that's driving at something more universal and timeless?
I definitely see it as a framework that is universal, that can be applied to children around the world. I'm in Nigeria. I lived in the US for a while, and I've been blessed to travel quite a bit. Simone is in Amsterdam. I've spent some time in the UK and visited schools and just worked with parents around the world and in almost all the continents. And I think that it's universal because Dr. Montessori did not actually create this method. She actually watched children. She observed children to see what were their characteristics. What are they drawn to? What are they interested in? How do they respond to things that are offered to them? How do they respond to experiences that they have? And then she noticed that there was a pattern. There's some basics that children, regardless of where you find them, are attracted to certain things or behave in a certain way. She talked about what she called the human tendencies. So what are the things that human beings, regardless of where they are, regardless of their age, are drawn to do? Human beings like to explore. If you're an adult, maybe you like to travel to new places, or you like to try out different kinds of food, or you like to listen to different kinds of music. All of those things are explorations. Babies are the same way. Babies like to see, they like to touch, they like to smell, regardless of what country or continent a child is in. And so Montessori is actually based on these things that she found to be, you know, common. And so all of the things that were developed, the recommendations for how to interact with the children, are based on these things that are universal and do not change. Wherever you find yourself, you can apply Montessori. You could just, you know, customize it to your own context. But it's really based on the natural needs of a human being, regardless of your age.
Thank you. That was exactly the sort of philosophical framework I was hoping to set up for our listeners, as we're both placing both of you in two different locations around the world, but also just thinking about the way that in the observations that Maria Montessori made, that it wasn't just about her context, it was about a way of looking at the world from the ground up. So, Simone, you wrote the wildly popular book, The Montessori Toddler, and now you have both co-written the new book, The Montessori Baby. There is a very special time when a baby is born. And motherly, we like to say that a mother is born too. There are two new creations in that early postpartum time. There's a term for it in Montessori, of the becoming of the new life, the becoming of the mother, but also the interplay of the parent or mother and child. Can you talk about that really critical period and, according to the Montessori method, what that time is for?
So in the first 6 to 8 weeks, we have symbiosis, and this is the symbiotic period. And symbiosis is a biological term about two organisms living together. And this is in a moment where the family is created. And this time is a unique time when you're getting to know your baby and they're getting to know us. I love that from in utero, you've already started establishing that relationship. We can already be touching our stomach and you can feel them kicking and responding back to you. So you can start observation even before they've come out of your belly. They've responded to the music that you've played, if you play any musical instruments, any songs that you sang, and then that becomes like a transition moment and they're points of reference as soon as they come out into the real world. The symbiosis is also a transition from in utero to outside for the baby, which is a huge change. And so we try and make the home a little quieter, a little warmer, so that it's more comforting for the baby to make that transition. And we really try not to have so many visitors and expectations for ourselves and to drop everything so that we can really be in this bubble to get to know each other, for the baby to get to know us, their rhythms. And there's so much for us to learn, and we have to rest as well and to be cared for. I think it's such a unique way to look at it. And I love now that people are looking at the 40 days and things like that after birth, because this is actually what Montessori philosophy has always said about that symbiotic period.
Yeah, I read an article. I don't know that this can be objectively proven, but I read an article, I think, suggesting if you look from a psychological perspective, that the baby doesn't even necessarily realize that they're separate from the mother during that period of time, that there is a oneness to their experience, which I thought was super interesting. Simone, you brought up observation. So what does observing a baby, a newborn perhaps, look like? And in Montessori, observing isn't just about looking. It's about the way you look and the way you respond. So what does that actually mean?
Observing, like you said, is a big part of Montessori because it's how we learn. Even if you have learned a lot about Montessori, maybe you've read books, you have maybe taken the training like I had, you have learned about children in general. But then now we have our own babies in front of us. We want to get to know our own babies, this one baby. And the way that we can get to know about our own baby or the one baby in front of us is by observing. It's simply just watching, simply looking, but looking with the mind that the child has something to show us, that the child has something to tell us. I think it's a mindset shift, right? You can look at someone with the mind that I know you, or you can look at them like, I don't quite know you, but I really want to know you. And so we watch them without judgment, without preconceived notions, and just try to see. We're observing them over time and notice, are there any trends? Is there a particular way that the child cries when they're hungry? Is there a particular movement that they make when they want to sleep? What is happening with their mouth? What is happening with their bodies? What is happening with their eyes? What kind of sounds are they making? So for me, I actually co-slept with my baby, but they napped by themselves on my bed in their first few months. So around the third month, I wanted my first son to start napping on his own bed in his own room. But the first day that I put him on his bed in his room, after 40 minutes, I heard him crying and I went and I, you know, picked him up. And then I put him in my room to sleep the next day and he slept for 2 hours. And then I was talking to my friend who's also a Montessori parent. And she said, have you observed him? And I was like, oh, yeah, I remember. We have that tool that we can use. You know, sometimes in the heat of the moment, moment you forget. And so she said, observe him when he's sleeping in your room and also observe him in his own room. And so I observed him in my room and he did sleep, but around 40 minutes in my room, he would wake up and look around and he would go right back to sleep. And then the next day I observed him in his own room, around 40 minutes, he woke up and he looked around and he started to cry. And it happened again the next day. And I realized that, oh, maybe the environment is not familiar to him. And so when I, you know, discussed with my friend, she's like, oh, I wonder if is he spending time in his room outside of his nap? And no, he wasn't. So he was waking up after 40 minutes in this strange place. And so we started to spend some time there before his nap. And I put up some pictures of me and my husband at his level. And when I put him down for his nap, he would wake up and he would look around and he would lay back down and sleep. So if you spend a lot of time just looking at their movements, at their sounds, how they respond to things, you really get to know them.
Observation isn't just a passive thing, right? It's very active and deliberate act. And as a parent who discovered Montessori along the way, one of the things that I noticed happened after observation is that parenting in America, where I'm coming from, has this idea, especially in early childhood, that you should be pushing your kid along the development path. Like, how early are they holding their head up? And how soon are you making sure that they are playing with the right developmental toys? But what I learned through Montessori was, yes, there are stages of development and toys that are perhaps better suited for those stages, but to slow down and look at, what is my child noticing right now? What are they playing with right now? My oldest son is about to be 9. I come back to this framework all the time. I even have practiced that with my toddler now, but when he was a baby, maybe I wanted to read him a book, but he was content looking out the window, right? So just your response is recognizing that the child is telling you what they need and that your response is by observing. You don't need to change the subject. You don't need to force something on them.
Education is everything that they experience. It can just be that they're looking out the window. It doesn't mean that, oh, but just a minute, it's more educational to read this book. And what if they start reading the book from the back or the front, you know? And so what I love about a Montessori approach to babies is that a conversation when you're changing their diaper is just as important as them learning to post a ball through a hole, because that's what you saw on Instagram. And that it's not about actually getting them to academics faster. It's just about following each child and where they're at right now.
Another part I think that Montessori is more known for now is around the physical spaces and the role of the parent or the guide in setting up physical spaces. So what does that mean for a baby to set up the space with a Montessori mindset?
We actually think about the spaces where we put our children as prepared environments. We prepare environments that welcome them. We prepare environments that are beautiful for them, and we're conscious in choosing everything that is put in the child's environment. Dr. Montessori talks about the child in the first 6 years as having something called an absorbent mind. So basically, she says that the things that the child sees and experiences actually become a part of them. So children like order, and external order leads to internal order.
I'm so inspired by these Montessori classrooms and homes, but why does my baby love disorder? Why does all he want to do is take all of the measuring spoons out of the drawer and reach into the garbage and put some of the old food in his mouth and then throw it on the ground? Like, how does that work? Please help me.
I look at babies and I see scientists, right? They're figuring out the world through their experiences, through their interaction with the environment. So if they take a measuring spoon and they drop it, and it makes a sound or it drops on the floor, it's giving them some feedback, right? They're learning more about the world around them. Their interaction, their exploration is how they learn. So in a Montessori prepared environment, we limit, we don't put too much. You might put 6 items so that even if your little scientist explores everything and puts everything on the floor, it's not overwhelming. together you can collaborate to create that order again. Because human beings like order in the sense that they like to experience order, but they also like to create order. It's that Montessori lens, right? Like you can look at the child and say, oh, he's throwing everything on the floor. Or you can look at him and you can say he's discovering how things react or interact with each other. Now, about taking things out of the bin, if you're preparing an environment, you want to prepare a bin that you don't want him to touch things in. Maybe it should be a taller one. And then you have one that's his height that you know what goes into it. So you're controlling the environment such that whatever their interactions are, they can be positive. It can be an opportunity for them to learn something. Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. And I was listening to a podcast between the two of you last night. And I know, Junifa, you mentioned how the more kids you had, you now have three, you've been able to kind of give yourself more grace in the pressure to set up those environments. At the same time, I totally agree. I know I'm happier when there's order, and the value of getting your children involved in recreating order from disorder and how key that is.
Can I also add that order is really important for the baby because it's their points of reference, that they always get changed in the same spot. They always sleep in the same spot. Or when I sit in this sofa, I'm going to be fed here. And that gives them a lot of safety and trust in the world as well. But we're not really consistent creatures and we do it differently. But if we do have consistent spaces for sleeping, consistent places where we change or dress them, then we're actually also helping them with those transition moments.
So I want to talk about supporting baby development. I know that all parents want to make sure they understand baby development, right? There's no school you have to go to become a parent. A whole section of your new book is devoted to this, from language development to movement development. I'm curious if you could walk our listeners through some of those key activities that you recommend to support your baby's development in their first year of life.
I think it's a beautiful question because they are developing, but we're their guide. And so we're looking at what are they mastering right now and how can I facilitate that the best. One of the key things is visual development. So they can see the distance from their parents' eyes when they're feeding at the breast. So that kind of distance. And we have a beautiful series of mobiles in Montessori where you can also have the child looking at a simple black and white mobile called a Minari when they're first born, and then they move on to beautiful colored ones and then gradated colors, which is the Gobi mobile and different things like that. But you don't even need mobiles because just your face is already a beautiful thing for the child to look at. To have your hand up against light and making shadows is beautiful. Putting them under trees, they love the shadows that the leaves will make. That's the most beautiful natural mobile. And so visual development, then communication is a need. And so holding your baby out in front of you at arm's length and then you poking out their tongue at you and you poking your tongue back, that's like a first conversation. And then they seem to respond and you're like, we just had a conversation. Or if they gurgle, we make a gurgling sound back. And it's not baby talk like goo ga ga ga. It's really actually them realizing if I say that and someone responds to me. And we give really rich language in Montessori. So instead of just saying, oh, there's a woof woof, we say, oh, there's a dog. Or if we actually know the name of the dog, we could, even when they're a baby, say, that's a Labrador. What a beautiful Labrador. And we can give them all of the language about the birds you see and those kind of things. So there's communication and reading books and singing songs, all of these rich ways to nurture your child's communication needs. And then movement's a big part of baby's development. So as beautiful it is to carry our baby a lot of the time, it's also lovely to have a movement mat where they can lay on the ground and stretch as far as they can, for them to bring their hands together and discover their hands, for them to reach their toes. And then when they start to grasp at things, they can have a mobile where they're actually interacting and pulling at something and it makes a sound. So then it's moving on to how their hands can be refined. And then once you notice that they're starting to roll over, how can I encourage them to roll? Now that they're wanting to wiggle and slither along the ground, maybe it's having a simple basket of balls that don't roll too far, but are enough that just will encourage them to move. And then it starts to be that the moment they start crawling, they often start pulling up. So having heavy furniture that they can pull up on, you can make a little ballet bar on the wall. So there's lots of ways to encourage their gross motor movements, but we always never try and put them into a position they're not ready for. So even you might find that they're not actually, they'll crawl before they sit because we're not prepping them into positions. So they're actually learning to trust their body and get into positions that they're capable of moving on.
there's a lot there. I think a lot of parents are so drawn to Montessori, but it feels like a lot of work, or like they have to do it perfectly. I know enough about Montessori to know that the emphasis on preparing the environment is the adult's job in this scenario. But that by doing that work, you are freeing the child up to just be who they are at that stage of development. But it does seem like it's a lot of work, but maybe it's less work than another style of parenting that might believe you have to be hands-on all the time and push your child to achieve certain milestones at a certain time. How do you see that balance?
So I think that in some ways it requires or asks a lot of you in the beginning. Anything in the beginning takes a little more effort in some ways. In other ways, it's actually a little bit easier. You prepare the environment and then you're not responsible for entertaining your child. Your child actually figures out how to do things for themselves. So your work is in preparing the environment, but then you have freedom to observe. So in that way, I think that it makes it easier. I also think that with social media and all of the information out there, there are misconceptions. You're not actually expected to, you know, have a perfect shelf. I don't think that that's the core or the essential of Montessori. I think the essential is really in how you view your child, how you incorporate them to be part of your life. It doesn't have to be anything perfect. It can be a blanket on the side of your living room so that your child has a space and they feel like they're part of your home. It can be like at the edge of a rug, just arrange some things, three choices that they can choose from, giving them those opportunities where they can make choices. So it's really as much as you want or as little as you want. What's most important is your view of the child. So maybe you don't have the time to prepare mobiles, but maybe you're spending a little bit of time outside in the garden so that they can watch leaves in the tree, or they can watch birds fly by, having them in the kitchen while you cook, talking them through the process. It's much easier to just put your child's clothes on for them. It takes a little bit more effort to be patient, to show them, this is how we put your shoes. Now you try it. So that's the effort that it takes in the beginning. But when your child gets to that point where they're independent, it's actually beautiful. That point where they can do things for themselves, where they don't need you to entertain them. When I have meetings, they're able to keep themselves busy. If they're hungry, they are able to tell I'm hungry and they can walk downstairs and prepare a snack for themselves. It's like an upfront investment that yields and returns so much throughout your child's life. And apart from capability, just the joy, like I find that Montessori children, at least in my experience, are joyful children. They're happy. They enjoy the world. They take joy in little things. They're not hard to please. I think it's a gift and it's worth it, you know, if it requires a little more effort upfront.
And there's nothing about a perfect parent anyway. None of us are perfect. So we actually model a lot of mistakes and grace and apologizing and making amends. And so it's actually a process of being together, and they're not going to be perfect and they're going to make mistakes. So we can accept them when they make mistakes and forgive and all move on as well. And I think that Montessori shouldn't be a perfect house or any expectation like that, because we're raising children in a real world. Actually, I love that about parenting. As much as the difficult times have been really difficult, I feel like that's when my relationship with my kids has got even stronger, because they know that I love them even in the hard times.
And one area I can imagine where that is a lot of work up front, but maybe the benefits are appreciated sooner, maybe as in eating and feeding. What is a Montessori approach to feeding a child?
Well, again, we're observing our child to see when they're showing interest, when they're leaning forward as we're taking a bite of our food. You're like, oh, okay, you're looking like you're starting to get interested in food right now. I love baby-led weaning. I think it does fit quite well with the Montessori approach, because the child, instead of having a spoon come to their face when I'm ready to give them the next spoonful, the child can pick up a chunk of bread and bring it to their mouth. And so it's a lot about experiences and them trying things, but also having tasty food. Like if you've ever tasted baby food, it's not very delicious, right? So I would only want to feed my child something that is nutritious and tasty. I also love that Montessori is about food is nutrition and it's connection. It's both of those things. So it's not that you stick your child in the high chair with their food and then you go off to get ready for work. You actually try and be having your meal at the same time as the baby so that they're seeing that this is nutrition. I'm not like eating as I'm playing. You know, you see parents running around trying to like shove spoons of food into their children's mouth so they get their food. And it's actually about the child learning to trust their own body. When am I had enough? Then I don't take any more. Oh, are you telling me that your body feels full right now? Thank you. You're all done. And you could make a little hand signal. All done? Are you all done? I did some baby signs with my babies because I'm a fast, you know, paced person. And actually it really helped me to slow down, repeat some things. You start with like three signs, more food and milk. And it's a really good reminder and it fits really well with the Montessori approach to give them time to process.
Do you actually have them feed themselves even in that first year of life? And isn't that just so messy?
One thing that's different for some people is that we actually set the table for our babies. So you can have a 6-month-old child with a tablecloth, a glass plate or a metal cup or a glass cup, real utensils that are child-sized, and they feed themselves. You're sitting there, you're putting just enough. You might put a little bit on their plate and then help them if they need the help to put it on the fork or on the spoon and they can bring it to their own mouths. And I haven't found it to be messy because, again, you're controlling the environment, right? You're putting just a little bit on their plate. You're not putting a big bowl that everything can get on the floor. And you're observing so that as soon as the child maybe drops one on the floor, you might say, oh, I think you might be done. Let's move this away. So in that way, from a very early stage, they're actually learning the expectations. And remember, you're also eating beside them. So they're seeing what we do when we eat. They're seeing what we do when we're done. It's actually beautiful to watch. Children are so capable. And I think that that's the gift or the beauty of Montessori. We see how capable, we see how different they are from the picture that's painted for us. We see that they are actually able to eat without making a big mess. And if they make a big mess, they're able to help us clean it up. It's again, how you look at it. You can see a big mess or you can see an opportunity to learn to clean up.
Yeah. All right. I love it. I'm feeling inspired. So Simone and Junifa, thank you both so much for sharing so much of your wisdom and joining us on the Motherly Podcast.
Thank you so much to everyone for your time today.
You used to go to a Montessori school, right?
Yeah.
What was it like?
Montessori.
Who started Montessori schools?
Maria.
Maria? Mm-hmm. Wait, your name is Maria.
No, Maria Montessori.
Oh.
Because that's why she made Montessori. That's why they call her Maria Montessori. My name is technically not Maria, just in a different language.
Technically. Because your name's Mary, but in another language, it might be Maria.
So technically, I have two names.
You do technically have two names, yeah. What was your favorite thing that you remember from when you went to Montessori school?
Awesome.
You learned how to wash your hands really well, right?
Yeah.
What's the song they taught you at Montessori school to wash your hands? Wash, wash, wash your hands. Wash your, wait, make them nice and clean. Scrub the bottoms and the tops and fingers in between.
It's really annoying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's it for this week's episode. Simone and Junifa, thank you for joining us. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in to this week's podcast. We have another amazing guest coming your way next week. So as always, we would love it if you spread the word about the Motherly Podcast. Leave us a review right now, if you can, on Apple Podcasts, because it really helps other mothers discover our show. The Motherly Podcast is produced by Jennifer Bassett with audio engineering from Seaplane Armada. Our music is from the Blue Dot Sessions. I'm your host, Liz Tennedy. Thanks so much for listening.
Planning for your next trip? elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.